Okay, so are you ready to go on a little adventure with me today?
Always up for an adventure.
All right, excellent. The Church of Tinkerbell podcast.
Faith, imagination, the power of belief.
Love and acceptance to make the world a better place.
What would happen if we all just tried to see the world through the eyes of a child again, even for a moment?
It's a beautiful thought, isn't it?
It is.
The Church of Tinkerbell.
The Church of Tinkerbell. All right, I'm intrigued. What truly makes a story sacred to you? Mm. I mean, is it its age or, you know, maybe where it comes from, like a specific religious tradition?
Right.
Or does it need to be like historically proven, factually true, for it to have that really deep, undeniable meaning for you?
Yeah, those are the usual assumptions, aren't they?
Exactly. So today we're going on a deep dive and we're going to challenge some of those first thoughts. We're exploring this really fascinating idea from an article called Sacred Stories We Tell Ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to unpack how things like myths, fantasy, even fairy tales, well, they can be profoundly sacred.
Okay.
Not because they're dogma or, you know, historical fact.
Yeah.
But because they just sort of ring true inside us.
Yeah, resonance.
Yeah, they speak to our souls often without us fully getting why. Through awe, maybe metaphor, or just the sheer fun of play.
Well, for centuries, you know, sacredness has often been really tightly bound to what we call dogma.
Right, fixed beliefs.
Exactly. Fixed beliefs, presented as absolute truth, unquestionable. And this often comes with, well, rigid hierarchies, externally imposed rules.
Yeah.
But what's compelling about this deep dive, I think, is that it invites us to explore a really liberating alternative.
Okay.
It challenges us, you, to consider that maybe authentic sacredness, it actually emerges from something far more intrinsic.
Inside us.
Yes. From beauty, from empathy, from the boundless landscape of our own imagination. And this can lead to real personal transformation. Not through threats or, you know, fear-based stuff.
But through resonance.
Through genuine internal resonance.
That's such a huge distinction, isn't it? It really shifts the whole perspective.
It does.
So our mission today, then, is to unpack precisely how these incredible stories, ones we might overlook, shape us. Not just intellectually.
No, much deeper.
But through feeling, through living. Experience, they offer us profound moral insight.
Yeah.
Not like a lecture or a list of commandments.
Much more subtle.
Yeah, by inviting us into what the article calls, I love this phrase, sacred play.
Sacred play. I like that too.
Okay, so let's really unpack this core idea, the one that anchors the whole discussion.
Let's do it.
A story's true value isn't about whether it really happened. It's about what it makes happen in us.
Right. The internal effect.
Think about your own experience listening now. When you really get lost in a great story, you're not just like passively downloading info.
No, not at all.
You're experiencing it. You're walking in the character's shoes.
Right.
Feeling their struggles, their hopes, their tough choices.
You inhabit it.
Exactly. And it's that deep personal connection, that resonance, that really sparks our ethical understanding. I think much more than just a list of rules, wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. And what really stands out here for me is this notion. The article describes the imagination itself as a sacred organ.
Wow. A sacred organ.
That's powerful.
It's a powerful metaphor, isn't it? Because when we immerse ourselves in myth or fantasy, we often bypass those, well, rigid frameworks. Theology, factual history, things that can sometimes box us in.
Right. The analytical brain switches off a bit, sort of. And instead, we access something much older, I think, more fundamental, an emotional truth, symbolic insight, a morality that's felt, that's lived.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it. A young child, way before they get complex abstract ideas, will often learn more about kindness, about compassion, from a simple story like The Lion and the Mouse.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Than maybe from a sermon on charity. Mm. And similarly, you know, an adult reading, say, The Intricate Worlds of Ursula K. Le Guin or The Amazing Tapestries Woven by Neil Gaiman.
Oh, yeah.
They might genuinely feel more alive, more connected to these deep truths about being human, about society.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more than they might in a traditional place of worship.
Why do you think that is?
Because the imagination, it lets us experience truth in a way that kind of slips past our usual defenses.
That makes so much sense. Like it finds a back door to our wisdom.
Something like that, yeah.
So it's not about stories demanding belief in some external, you know, capital T truth.
No, not demanding belief.
It's more like they invite us to remember who we are deep down, to reconnect with that inner self, that empathy. That feels really powerful and liberating.
It is liberating. It puts the locus of meaning back inside us.
And it's not just about right now, is it? Our current experiences. So many of us, like from when we were really young, we were taught right from wrong, not through, you know, doctrine or strict rules, but through stories.
Absolutely. Bedtime stories, fables.
Yeah. When I think back, it wasn't some formal ethics class that taught me about fairness. It was, I don't know, Cinderella maybe, or The Boy Who Cried Wolf, that cautionary tale.
Classic examples.
Fairy tales, fables. With all their magic and mischief, they give us these fantastic, like, bite-sized ethical dilemmas.
Right, wrapped in narrative.
And there's a good reason we keep telling these stories, right? Generation after generation, across cultures, it must mean they work. They're effective somehow.
Indeed. They persist precisely because they foster discernment, not just blind obedience.
Ah, discernment. That's a good word.
They don't just say, do this or don't do that. Instead, they invite us, they invite you, to recognize the potential consequences of actions.
To think it through.
To empathize deeply with others, and to make choices driven by genuine feeling, real understanding. Not just by fear of getting caught or following some external rule book. Think about the archetypes, those figures that pop up again and again, everywhere, throughout history.
Like the hero, the trickster.
Exactly. The selfless hero standing up for the weak,
yeah.
The cunning trickster who challenges the status quo, the monster who embodies maybe unchecked desire or fear.
Yeah.
These universal figures, they aren't just characters in a story. They actually help us internalize really complex ethical thinking.
How so?
In a way that resonates deep in our psyche, often without us even consciously realizing the profound impact they're having. They're building like a moral scaffolding inside us for how we see the world.
It's true. The best stories, they don't just tell us what to think.
Okay.
More importantly, they show us how to think critically, how to feel deeply, and ultimately how to care about others, about the world.
They activate our moral imagination.
Yeah, like a muscle. That point about internalizing ethics through archetypes. It's incredibly powerful. It makes me think, though, how some stories feel like they guide us towards, you know, self-discovery, empowerment.
Right.
While others, they feel like they're trying to put us in a box to control us somehow, our actions, our beliefs.
Yes.
Is that the distinction the article is getting at when it talks about myths that liberate versus myths that control?
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
And this is where the article makes a really crucial distinction. It reminds us, look, not all sacred stories are created equal.
Okay.
And this is where it gets really interesting, I think, for anyone trying to navigate their own moral landscape today.
How so?
Well, the core difference, it lies in the direction these narratives point us.
Inward or outward.
Precisely. Do they guide us inward towards our own innate capacity for insight, for ethical reasoning, for moral understanding? Or do they point us outward towards some external authority, a person, an institution, a text that claims to speak for the divine or for some ultimate unquestionable truth?
Okay, I see.
Consider, for instance, some controlling myths, like the very old and enduring myth of hell.
Right, fear-based.
Exactly, instills fear of eternal punishment. Or think about stories that rigidly divide humanity. You know, the chosen versus the unchosen.
Lessen them.
Pure versus impure.
Yeah.
Saved and damned. These kinds of stories, the article puts it so powerfully, they aren't really sacred in any soul-nourishing way. They're often weapons dressed as wisdom.
Wow. Weapons dressed as wisdom.
Insidious tools designed not to enlighten, but actually to instill fear, enforce obedience, maintain power structures by creating division.
And then on the flip side, you have these amazing liberating myths, the ones that genuinely empower us.
Exactly. Like Prometheus.
Yeah. Defying the gods, enduring all that suffering, just to bring fire, knowledge to humankind. Enabling progress, independence.
A powerful symbol of challenging authority for the greater good.
Or even a more contemporary one, like Moana, venturing way beyond the safety of her reef to restore the heart of the world, finding her own strength, her own courage.
Yes.
Yes.
These stories don't bind us. They inspire us. They show us that courage is possible, even against huge odds.
Right.
And that the sacred isn't just something you bow down to out of fear. It's something you carry within you.
A wellspring.
A wellspring of resilience, creativity, the power to shape your own destiny. It's really a call to action, isn't it? rather than just an order to obey.
Yeah, absolutely. There's this really beautiful paradox in fantasy too, isn't there?
Tell me more.
Like, the more unreal the world seems, dragons, spaceships, whatever, the more real our emotions often become.
That's true.
You're reading about, I don't know, elves or something, and suddenly you feel this intense pang of loss or this surge of hope that feels incredibly human, deeply resonant. What do you think is happening there in our minds when we engage with these really fantastical places that allows for such deep feeling?
Well, that's a brilliant observation. I think it's because fantasy provides this incredibly safe and expansive space.
Safe how?
Safe to explore what it means to be human, but free from the labels, the constraints, the baggage of the real world.
Mm-hmm.
When the setting is far removed from our everyday lives, when the characters are, you know, hobbits or aliens or witches or talking animals, we're often less defensive.
Okay.
We're less burdened by our own biases, our preconceived ideas about people like us versus people not like us.
Mm-hmm.
And this psychological distance, paradoxically, it allows for deeper emotional immersion.
Interesting.
It stretches our imagination, expands our moral compass in really significant ways. It invites us, invites you, to inhabit perspectives you might otherwise just dismiss out of hand.
Right.
And what's truly powerful here, I think, is its particular resonance for, say, queer readers or neurodivergent kids, people of color. Frankly, anyone who's ever felt like they don't quite fit into the world as it is.
Mm-hmm.
In these fantastical realms, you don't have to fit. You actually get the power to reshape the world around you sometimes, to see yourself as a hero or a powerful mage, regardless of how society might label you.
That makes so much sense. It's the very strangeness of it gives us permission.
Permission to drop our guard.
Yeah, to drop our guard and just connect, to see our shared humanity reflected in the most unexpected characters.
Whether it's the quiet courage of a hobbit,
right,
the outsider status of an alien, the wild wisdom of a witch, or, you know, the simple loyalty of talking animals.
They all teach us something.
They help us build these bridges of empathy.
Yeah.
Across vast differences. It's like these stories whisper to us, here, you're allowed to feel. Here, you're allowed to be. Your authentic self, without judgment.
And through that, they make us more humane. More understanding, definitely. Yeah.
Undeniably, they broaden our capacity for empathy.
It just makes so much sense when you think about it that way. When something is truly beautiful enough, whether it's music or a view or a really profound story, we don't need someone to tell us it's sacred. We just feel it.
It resonates.
Yeah, that reverence, that wonder, that feeling of stillness or joy.
Yeah.
It just arises organically inside us.
Yeah.
So these sacred stories, they don't actually require some divine stamp of approval from on high.
No external validation needed.
Their secretness isn't given to them. It's awakened by them. It's found in the impact they have on our inner world.
Precisely. And this is really about cultivating sacredness without domination.
Ooh, I like
it. And experiencing beauty without dogma. Yeah. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it suggests that this kind of sacredness, because it's chosen, because it's felt, rather than imposed, it's actually far more resilient.
How so?
Well, it can't be enforced by external power. It can't be taken away just because doctrines change. It has to be chosen freely, repeatedly, by each person. And this raises a really important question, I think, for anyone seeking profound meaning today. Especially maybe for those who felt alienated by traditional religious structures.
Yeah.
How do we consciously cultivate and recognize this inherent chosen sacredness in our own lives? How do we build a meaningful inner world that isn't dependent on somebody else telling us it's valid?
And for many people who've left behind those dogmatic religions, maybe with some pain or feeling disillusioned, there can sometimes be this huge vacuum, right? Where those old sacred stories used to be.
Yeah, sense of loss, yeah.
But the article frames this not just as a loss, but actually as a rare and powerful gift.
A gift.
Yeah, the profound chance to consciously choose which stories will shape us now, going forward, to basically curate our own library of meaning.
That's it, exactly. We don't have to just adopt someone else's myth, you know, verbatim, to make meaning.
We get agency.
We get agency. We have this incredible opportunity to write our own sacred stories. Or maybe revisit ancient tales, remix them, infuse them with new resonance for our modern lives. See ourselves in those old struggles and triumphs.
Mm-hmm.
We can deliberately choose stories that emphasize interconnection, that speak to transformation, that invite that sense of sacred play into our everyday lives.
Okay.
We can consciously center things like empathy, consent, curiosity in the narratives we embrace and the ones we maybe create ourselves.
Tell the truth in metaphor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Learn to tell the truth in metaphor, not just literal facts. Understanding that symbolic truth can often run much deeper than mere historical accuracy.
Right.
Ultimately, this lets us reclaim the right to call something sacred, not because it's divinely inspired in some external authoritative way,
but because
it actively inspires the divine, the best, the most humane parts within us. It's about forging an internal compass.
That's a beautiful way to put it. So, wrapping this up, what does this all mean for you listening right now?
Yeah, what's the takeaway?
It means that sacredness, well, it isn't solely the property of religious institutions. It's not just about specific gods or rigid creeds.
It's broader than that.
It's about depth. It's about finding immense beauty, about discovering profound meaning, forging genuine connection. It's about that incredible, sometimes quiet, transformative moment when a story could be an ancient myth, a huge fantasy epic, or just a simple fable opens a door inside you and something truly real, something deeply resonant steps through.
And those myths, those fantasies, those fairy tales we carry with us, the ones we write ourselves maybe, or the ones we revisit again and again, the ones we whisper to our children,
yeah,
they are so much more than just entertainment or escapism.
Yeah.
They are, in essence, sacred invitations.
Invitations to what?
Not just invitations to believe a certain thing or conform to a specific path, but invitations to become more fully ourselves, to step into a richer, more empathetic, and ultimately a more meaningful existence.
So our final thought for you today, go ahead, tell yourself a sacred story. Not because it's true in some cosmic, unquestionable, literal way that demands your absolute faith.
No.
But because it helps you live more truly, with greater compassion, maybe deeper insight, and definitely a more profound sense of wonder.
Yeah.
Think about the stories you're carrying right now. The ones you keep telling yourself, about the world. What are they? And what are they helping you become?
Thanks for going on this little adventure with me today.
Anytime.
And listener, keep sprinkling that fairy dust, all right? We'll see you next time.